Chapter 22, about Mount Murukchik and about Thunderbolt, who rode away.
"Any news of Pandarichki?" asked Greencoat obstinately before getting in. Good Fortune, who was pouring gasoline into the tank, said, "Oh, yes, just wait a minute," and he beckoned to Dasha. "We're off now," he said to him, "and we thank you for your good meal."
"I cannot bear such words," replied Dasha modestly.
"Then pass them on to your master Pandarichki."
"Pandarichki won't be back for 2 or 3 days," said Dasha, winking significantly. "He's ridden to Kuei Hua to see the Amban."
"On his account?" asked Good Fortune, glancing toward Greencoat.
Dasha nodded and put his finger to his lips.
"Hamaga," said Good Fortune. "There's nothing to fear." "Hey, Greencoat," he shouted, "come over here. Pandarichki has ridden to Kuei Hua to see the Amban about a certain matter."
"I know that," said Greencoat amiably.
"Tell the fellow his master needn't trouble any more. I withdraw my charge. My agent in Cowpound will come and settle the business as Pandarichki wishes."
He sighed as if he had given away a kingdom and went back, full of dignity, to his seat.
Good Fortune repeated Greencoat's words to the astonished Dasha, who was very pleased to have good news for his master.
"Why has Greencoat turned so peaceable?" he asked.
"I don't know," said Good Fortune. "What's the dispute about?"
"It's about 4 camels, and if you would like to know..."
"Yes," said Good Fortune, "I would. I think I left something behind in the yurt."
"We'll go and look," said Dasha. They both turned back to the yurt, and Dasha told the story.
3 years ago, in the third moon, Greencoat came to Pandarichki and said,
"I hear you wish to get your daughter married. Then you need money."
"I don't need your money," said Pandarichki.
"You could sell me some camel foals," Greencoat suggested. "I pay cash, and you won't lose a single bots if one of them dies."
Pandarichki was surprised, for what does a merchant want with camel foals?
"A merchant needs pack camels 3 or 4 years old, and then they cost 60 or 70 bots each. But Greencoat wanted camel foals, and that was that. He offered 30 bots apiece. So Pandarichki sold 20 foals and pocketed the money, which he needed, though he had said he didn't.
"I can't take the foals with me now," said Greencoat. "Put them out to pasture, and I'll fetch them in the autumn."
Pandarichki agreed, and by the autumn the foals had become fine young animals. Greencoat came and branded his mark on their cheeks.
"I can't take them with me now," he said. "I'll take them in the spring. Herd them well, and don't let the wolves get them."
Again Pandarichki agreed.
"Aha," said Good Fortune.
"Why do you say aha?" asked Dasha.
"Because I know exactly what's coming."
"You can't know it."
"Yes, I do," said Good Fortune. "It's easy enough. The following spring, Greencoat came back, and in the autumn he came again, and each time he said, 'I can't take the camels.'"
"It was just as you say," cried Dasha, astonished. "How can you know what you didn't hear and didn't see?"
"The thoughts of a bad man are easier to guess than the thoughts of a good one. Go on, tell me more."
"The last time Greencoat was here," Dasha continued, "Pandarichki said to him, 'It is only right that you should pay some small compensation.'"
"You want to cheat me, do you?" shouted Greencoat. "For 3 years you've had the hair of my camels, and their food costs you nothing. There can be no question of money."
"Then give me 4 of the 20 camels as compensation," said Pandarichki. "My people have herded and reared them for 3 years, and when it was cold, we covered them with felts."
"There could be no question of that either," shouted Greencoat, enraged,
and he went off and brought a charge against my master with the Amban in Kuei Hua.
"Aha," said Good Fortune.
"Why do you say aha?" asked Dasha.
"Because that's what Greencoat always does," said Good Fortune. "But it's the first time he has taken back a charge. I'm wondering what's behind it. Goodbye, Dasha, and I wish you a good and easy time."
"May your road be easy and safe," Dasha replied.
Good Fortune would have liked to drive off at a high speed to show what a magnificent car he had, but the ground was too soft. The red lowest cliffs were getting nearer. At their feet the sand was blown into drifts, and soon they turned into the narrow gully between the cliffs. There were only a few inches to spare at each side, yet he never let the truck rub against the walls of Lois, and the cliffs remained untouched. As they emerged from the gully, what Good Fortune had called a new world opened before them. A gentle slope glided down to a broad valley, in which a great herd of horses was grazing, probably about 400. Three mounted herdsmen were minding them. The sun shone on the yellow winter grass, and the countless distant hills were also yellow and glittering. Only on their north sides were they cold and dark, and streaked with the snow of the day before. In the south, edging this incredibly vast landscape, lay mountain chains, showing a confusing jumble of peaks and jagged teeth. They glistened in the sun, and when one tried to look at them steadily, they seemed to hop up and down. So this was Sharamuran Valley. For a valley in the real sense, it was much too vast, because it embraced all that the eye could see far and wide. But there was no river, not even a little brook in it. No smallest trickle of water was to be seen, nothing but the empty, stony riverbed. True, to the north, between the hills, a blue mobile strip, which looked like water, appeared now and then, but anyone knowing Mongolia and the Gobi Desert would know at once that this was a mirage. The Arabs call it a Fata Morgana, but the Mongols don't waste a word on it. Right in the middle of Sharamuran lay a broad, dark mass, not at all high, but deeply clefted and strangely out of keeping with the gentle hills around. Emerging from the high, lowest cliffs, Christian could see into the clefts as into a labyrinth which had opened up. This great massif was made of greenish-black stone, and its name matched its appearance in strange wildness. It was called Murukchik. We hear, on the one hand, that the mountain has this beautiful but wild name. On the other hand, we hear that it is not so called. Big Tiger and Christian did not know this, but good fortune explained it to them later, saying, "The mountains have names, but their names must not be spoken when you are near them. Only if they're far away and can't be seen may you safely speak of them. But when they're beside you, such as this terrible Murukchik now, it is a different matter. For on all mountains, particularly the wild and high ones, dwell demons who do not wish their dwelling places to be called by name. Therefore, they are given some harmless, neutral name. Murukchik, for instance, is called by a word which means the clefted region. If the demons hear this, they don't suspect you are talking of their mountain. Whereas if you spoke its right name, you would be sure to meet with some great misfortune." But now they looked with astonishment at the vast expanse and jumped when good fortune sounded the horn. Toot, toot! The horses grazing nearby bounded away, and the boys looked to see what was there. They knew at once what good fortune meant. A narrow path branched southward, and looking at it closely, they could see the fresh hoof prints of a horse. A long way ahead, they saw the Lama Thunderbolt, who was hastening to the king of the Sunnites. The journey passed merrily. Good fortune was able to drive as fast as he liked, and in the gaiety of his heart he trilled a song. After 2 hours, a well-trodden camel path emerged from the south. Good fortune opened the little window, and Christian and Big Tiger stood up to hear him. "This is the great caravan road from Kwe Hwa to Hami. Is it on your map, Kwe Chan?" "I shall look and see, honored sir." "Do we still drive to Cow Pond by this road?" asked Greencoat. "Yes," Good Fortune replied, "and we shall go by it to Sing Kyang. True, there are deviations." "At Four Trees, for instance," said Greencoat. "I see you know the route well," said Good Fortune. "Yes," said Greencoat complacently. "From now onwards, I know my way. Will you therefore please stop, and we shall change places." "What?" cried Good Fortune. "Do I understand you rightly or wrongly?" "But we've spoken of this before," Greencoat replied in a low voice, closing the rear window. Soon the truck stopped, and they changed places. After a slightly bumpy start, Greencoat got into his stride and drove like an experienced driver, following the camel track as straight as a line. Christian and Big Tiger sat quietly in their places. Though it was not cold, they drew their coats closer around them and pulled the fur collars up on their necks. "It can't be helped," said Big Tiger gloomily. "It can't be helped," agreed Christian. "What?" said Big Tiger. "You say it can't be helped, too? You mustn't. You must say something else." "I can't think of anything else." "Kwe Chan," entreated Big Tiger, "think of something else. The two of us can't be without courage." "Then we must make an agreement," said Christian. "Only one of us at a time can be desperate and say, 'It can't be helped.'" "Agreed," declared Big Tiger. "I'll begin. It can't be helped. He looked at Christian, and they both burst out laughing. Christian opened the briefcase. I'll have a look at the map, he said, to see how we're situated.
Can you read that on the map?
We can read it together. Look, here's Sharamoran, where we are now. And there's the caravan road which Good Fortune spoke of. It's all green round about, but after that it's white or brown, and there's no more green until the Etzen Gol, where there's a narrow streak of green. So the desert begins right behind Cow Pond, and it looks bad for us.
How does that make it look bad for us? Asked Big Tiger.
Remember what Greencoat said at White Stone? Christian reminded him. Besides, he's been so friendly in the last few days. That's the worst sign of all.
It's a bad sign for Good Fortune, too, Big Tiger suggested. Greencoat doesn't say a cross word to him anymore.
Perhaps it is, said Christian thoughtfully. Or perhaps it's something else. They both fell silent.
What about showing Good Fortune the cartridge, suggested Big Tiger. He'll ask where I got it, and I'll say I found it, and perhaps it fits his pistol, and then he'll try it, and when it fits, he'll notice all the rest are gone too, and he'll kick up a fearful row. Then I'll say, we don't know who stole it, but Greencoat has a whole lot like that one in his trousers pocket.
I'm afraid, said Christian, it's not a very good plan.
It is good, Big Tiger insisted. Just leave it to me.
But Greencoat must be far away when you come out with it.
He must be away somewhere for at least half an hour. The best way is for you to go for a walk with him until I have talked to Good Fortune.
Perhaps he wouldn't go for a walk with me.
He must, said Big Tiger. There's no way out.
Christian made no further reply. He only reflected how unpleasant it would be to go for a walk with Greencoat and wondered whether they'd talk about the weather or the antelopes.
It would certainly be frightening to be as long as half an hour alone with him, but he would not admit it. So he just looked silently at the black cliffs of Murukchik, which were coming nearer. As evening fell, they came to the end of the valley of Sharamoran. Christian pointed to the map, saying, "It's not far now to Cow Pond." An hour later, two yurts popped up on the right-hand edge of the valley. The pale moon rose in the clear sky over Mount Murukchik, and no one seeing it could remain depressed.